From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome to the Canva guided meditation for stress at work. Impending deadline? Generate Canva presentations in seconds.
So fast.
Brainstorm got too big? Ooh. Summarize with AI in a click.
Click, 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 click.
Writer's block? Release with Canva Magic Write.
Magical.
Stress less and save time at canva.com. Designed for work.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat. 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.
I've been thinking about marketplaces, so I got an expert to tell me more. Marcin Kurik, who's the CEO of Noble 9. He actually built companies focused on marketplaces and now thinks a lot about service level objectives. This is a bonus episode of The Business of Tech. So Marcin, you got my attention because of some of your work at your previous role. I'm going to talk a little bit about what you're doing at Noble 9 in a bit, but I actually want to dive in a little bit on your experience around marketplaces, and particularly for some of my listeners who may not even be familiar with the way online marketplaces bring together services and software and such. Like, can you give me your definition of marketplaces?
That's a very interesting question, because probably there are, I don't know, as many people, that many definitions of marketplaces. When you take it from the bottom up, of course, you know, there's the marketplace that is focused on infrastructure. So anything you would see from cloud services to applications running on top of that cloud, the cloud service, plus any type of managed service, for example, on top of that. So that's very popular when you're talking about AWS Marketplace or Google Cloud Marketplace. Oracle's got one as well. So that's very, very specific. Then, you know, we have a lot of aggregators that fit under the marketplace definition that, you know, focus mainly on SaaS and optimizing contracting for SaaS. And then, you know, all kinds of different add-on marketplaces that many companies out there provide, like, you know, Google Workspaces, for example, provide you a bunch of plugins for Gmail. So to me, every single one of them fits in that category. We'll see a lot of that convergence, I would say, right now, where, you know, infrastructure marketplaces also provide SaaS. But it all stays in this category where it's simplifying the transaction with the end customer, basically.
I like to start that, and you've ended actually with where I think the lead into. Let's put ourselves in the mind of the customer. And you've been involved with doing marketplaces, and you've helped set them up. How does a customer approach this? Are they looking at it as just a software buying platform? Are they looking at like a complete solution? Like, are they viewing it as like walking into the mall and perusing? What's the mindset of a customer who's trying to leverage a marketplace?
So I think over the years, and, you know, I started marketplaces when people were still thinking that Amazon is selling books. So it's been a while ago. You know, back in that day, I would say the customers were mainly looking for a POC, kicking tires, finding, you know, those few solutions that would make sense without really picking up the phone or finding someone on the web. With time, you know, over the past few years, I think the behavior has changed a lot. And we see organizations, even, you know, large enterprises consuming from cloud marketplaces for a number of reasons: simplification of their billing, make it easier for their internal teams to consume software. A lot of those organizations now allow separate teams pick the best tools for their job, for example, right? So there are a lot of different reasons. I think there's a lot of room for growth and improvement in those spaces. And you see a lot of that innovation happening, either AWS Marketplace, GCP Marketplace, figuring out how to really play with the channel, bring the other entities on the platform, and really bring the full experience for the end customer.
Okay. Now, I come from the services world, so I always like to think about it from that perspective. And I always quip the sort of Salesforce line of like, there's $4 to $5 worth of services for every dollar of, say, Salesforce software that's sold. If I'm thinking about it that way, when I enter a marketplace as a customer, or the marketplace is selling these solutions as a product, are they thinking about this as, if I make it a combo meal, is the Big Mac the software, and then the plus fries is the services, or is it really presented as the services are the lead where the product is dragged? How is that presented?
It's going to differ across different types of those marketplaces that we started with. But, you know, if you go with infrastructure right from the bottom, I would say that the focus is on consumption. And, you know, when you look at AWS or GCP, the goal for those organizations is to really spin up the usage of their own services. So bring those customers on their platform, spin it up, and that's really where they make money, right? When we go, higher, then I think we see more of a traditional classic approach where service companies are in quite similar situation, you know, help with implementation, managed services solutions that are basically stitched together with the solutions offered by those marketplaces. So I think, like I said, you know, I think we're coming more to the traditional way of consuming software in the enterprise while we remove the difficulty of configuration, you know, setup and operation on the cloud platform.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask what might be a simplistic question, but I think it's useful for definitions. Is the use of a marketplace e-commerce in your mind?
It would probably fit it under e-commerce definition. Yeah, I don't see why not.
Okay. And some of that is when we're thinking about digital acquisition, it's some of the strategies of e-commerce might actually work for many service providers. Now, I want to actually pivot a little bit because, you know, your experience went from that, but now you've moved on to thinking more about service level objectives and stuff. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing now at Noble 9.
So Noble 9 is basically a dedicated platform for management of service level objectives. Service level objectives come from Google, from SRE concepts that basically allow organizations to understand the behavior of their applications and proactively see the impact on the customer satisfaction. The reasons why companies are adopting this today is basically a proliferation of microservices, APIs, and, you know, just the sprawl of different services that need to be incorporated into applications. That makes it even more difficult to understand what other teams are doing. Even more so, very basic things. You might have 20 different teams, 20 different applications, or 20 different components of an application in your organization, and everybody's got a different reference point. So even finding this, what 99.9 means to one team might not mean the same thing to another team. So for us, it's all about standardizations, being able to truly understand the full impact of the application or any type of issue of the application on the end customer revenue. So it's more appealing to execs.
For any of us that have come from traditional infrastructure management, we're very familiar with the idea of a service level agreement or an SLA. What's the difference then between an SLA and an SLO?
Well, SLA is basically a legal construct between the customer and the provider, right? And again, those will differ not only across different organizations, different companies, but different teams technically, right? You have those examples where someone will exclude, for example, downtime that was planned, or looks at a certain event in a different way. So it, in many cases, what we find out when we hear from our customers, a lot of those things are not necessarily very, I would say, accurate. And it's really something to make it easier for the customer to understand what's being provided and, you know, provide those customers with credits or whatever it might be in an event of an issue, which happens, right? SLO is a little different. So also with SLAs, you really calculate SLAs after the fact. Something happens, you look at the downtime, you figure out according to your, you know, legal construct what it means and how you present it to the customer. SLOs are very much proactive. They're designed for you to understand if something is degraded or something is going down, something is about to happen. And it lets you really figure out if you should be taking any actions, right? A good example is if you're running in the cloud in one region and you have a failover opportunity for your application, right? If you see that it's degrading, you might have time to make this decision if you want to failover or not. And, you know, failover is great on slides, but we all know it's a very costly operation. So instead of doing this, you might understand, SLOs might tell you that the issue that you're experiencing is not necessarily impacting all the customers, not necessarily impacting the revenue for those customers, and you might not need to do those things, right?
Okay. If I'm thinking then about a relationship and the differences between an SLA and an SLO, is your vision of this then, what I'll use the Boolean references, is this an and or an or? Are they complementary or are they competitive? Like, is it and or an or and why?
I think it's a combination of both. So it would be, yes, it would be both are important. The question is how much you really want to expose to the customer. For now, the focus on SLO is very much internally. So it's a relationship between two different teams. Let's say you build a service that's performing some function. I'm using that service in my application. If I take a dependency on your application is only three nines, and I'm exposing it to my customers as 5.9 availability, then I have an issue to start with, right? So understanding that relationship is important for me internally. Now, for the external calculation from SLA perspective, that still might be 5.9s because you're excluding certain events, you're doing certain things, and that is fine. We see more and more of our customers that are actually pushing that information very transparently and exposing SLOs, that SLOs basically become their SLAs at the end of the day. It's very similar to, you know, a few years ago, maybe more than a few years ago, when we were buying something online, we just went there was some logo that it's super secure and don't worry about your credit card. We just put it in and everybody's happy. And, you know, with years, we started looking at security frameworks that you know, organizations start to implement. And nobody would really use that solution if it wasn't built to certain specs, right? We believe that we are heading in the same direction with availability. So right now, you know, we can tell the customers like, yeah, we're doing everything right and everything is good. Trust us. It's going to be performing. We already see customers requesting that information. How are things implemented? Can you assure us that what we're seeing, what we're going to see is going to be truly coming from your systems? You know, so it's pushing beyond that SLA in a transparency that really helps us understand how your application is behaving. What are the controls that you put in place to really deliver that level of reliability?
Now, the way you're talking about this, you're using all the cloud words, right? Which I would expect because it's very cloud forward and it's coming from a DevOps world. But I want to check, is the vision of the way you're thinking about this cloud only or simply everything? And it's just because you're leading with cloud? Like, what's the relationship then with SLOs and the cloud?
Well, some people say that everything is going in the cloud. So if that happens, that's fine. Our solution is definitely not built just for cloud. We work with on-prem systems, hybrid solutions. So our focus from the beginning, from the architecture of the system, has been the ability to run it in a hybrid environment and include on-prem systems. Because there still might be a few. There still might be, you know, applications where certain things are running, let's say, in a banking branch just to process things. And we see a lot of those, right? So for us, it's really the ability to service all of those use cases.
Okay. Now I'm going to then ask, which I would expect is probably an easy one for you on this, is how do I link SLOs to a customer's business outcome? Like, how do I make that connection between the two from a business delivery perspective?
Yeah. So it definitely, you know, it's collaboration. There's no silver bullet at this point. Understanding your business and understanding of components of the application that impact that revenue is still important to understand. There's no way around it. From that, you can really derive SLOs that are very, very specific to your use case. Think, for example, you know, you're selling tickets for events. Everything's going fine because, you know, there are middle of the road artists or whatever it might be. You don't have this load yet. You might not notice any degradation. However, when you start, you know, one time you have this big artist, big name, and all of a sudden, you know, the system is not down, but it's also not processing a certain transaction. If it's, you know, checkout or maybe picking a seat or whatever it might be. At that point, you might, from a business perspective, you have a full understanding that you get taking a hit on revenue, and you can translate it to a very specific piece of that application or a very specific service that is part of that application. And then you can, you know, specify SLOs that that define, let's say, the time from picking a seat to selling the ticket or transacting that credit card transaction, right? That gives you a very good understanding of what's going on. So when you think about when you have the spike, you start to see when things are degrading or going down, and you might choose an action that's going to you know, fix that problem, or you might figure out how to address it. So all of those things are still very important to understand. You can't just say SLO solved my problem. I don't have to understand my business. To the contrary, you really have to understand your business to derive SLOs that help you understand the impact on the customer and your revenue for that matter.
All right. So we both know that tools aren't necessarily the solution. They just enable it. If somebody's listening and saying, okay, this makes some sense to me, I want to start applying this, how do they get started if they haven't been thinking this way or working with SLOs? Where's the beginning?
Understanding your applications first, no question. But we can help at every level. We provide services, anything from very simple boot camps that take a few hours to help you understand, potentially help you find the starting point, what makes sense, all the way to full implementations ourselves or with our service partners. So we can take you all the way there if you're starting. We can also, you know, just help with specific things. There are a lot of organizations that hired someone that understands SLOs, but they don't necessarily know how to convey that story to their team. We can help with that as well. We have a lot of tools and services that we can bring to the table.
Remember, if you like this kind of content, you can support it directly. Visit patreon.com/MSP Radio for our Give What You Want program. Every little bit helps, and we are supported directly by listeners like you. The Business of Tech is written and produced by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. Like the content? Support the show at patreon.com/MSP Radio. Or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. If you want to reach our listeners, visit mspradio.com/engage.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.